we've given up on church, but not on God. If you'd like to learn more about our locations in Huntersville, Davidson, and Denver, North Carolina, you can check us out online at lakeforest.org. Thanks!
All right. We're still on donut time, but that's all right. We'll get there. Well, as a father of four, I am privy to some of the best questions that have been ever asked by human minds. I have four kids, 14 and younger, and they come up with some zingers. And I wanted to share with you this morning some of those questions and just impart some of my fatherly wisdom to you as we get started this morning. Maybe you'll one day have to face these questions, and you can take my answers free of charge. One of the questions I've been asked is, Dad, are there any monsters under my bed? And of course, the answer is no. Or how about this one? Dad, can I eat chocolate cake for dinner? The answer is no. Dad, can we tie a rope to the tree way up high above the roof and swing off the roof and jump? The answer is no. Do you see the pattern here? Pattern's about to break. Dad, where do babies come from? The answer is, go ask your mother. Simple reality is that all questions are not created equal, are they? Some questions carry a greater weight. They carry a greater significance. Some questions are throwaway questions. Other questions shape and mold and determine the entire trajectory of our lives. We've been in a series on the questions of Jesus, looking at different questions that Jesus asked people in the Bible and considering how we might respond if he were to ask us those same questions. And today we come to our last question in the series, and what I think is perhaps the most important question, the most significant question of all. It's a question on which the entire story of the Bible turns. It's a question of identity. It's this question. Jesus asks, who do you say I am? Who do you say I am? It's an interesting question, isn't it? And one that I think has the power to change us if we really sit with it, if we really weigh what is it that Jesus is asking us? What is it that he is probing in our hearts and our souls by this question? A quick survey of popular culture shows that this question is alive and well today, in spite of what researchers might say. Not only have there been more books written about Jesus than any other historical figure, but even today, Jesus dominates the publishing world. Movies are still being made about his life. Books are still being written. In fact, magazine covers. This was just a Google search and a screenshot. Every year, Jesus dominates the magazine racks. Who is this man? Who do we say that he is? It seems we're still wrestling with this question, aren't we? And what are we to say about him? What are we to think? In the early part of the last century, it became fashionable to question whether or not Jesus actually existed. Maybe you've heard of some of these arguments. Books were written saying that Jesus was a fictional character, someone that some Jewish revolutionaries made up, that he never actually walked this earth. But those arguments faded with the 20th century. In fact, most reputable historians today say, look, the evidence is just overwhelming. You don't have to agree with the claims of Jesus, but to say that he never existed, that there never was a man named Jesus of Nazareth, just goes in the face of all the evidence. In fact, even some of Christianity's greatest skeptics and discreditors, like Bart Erdman at UNC Chapel Hill, still believe that Jesus exists. It's not a question of whether there ever was a man, Jesus. The question is, who was he and what do we say about him? And so, at some point in our lives, every last one of us, you, me, everyone, must wrestle with this question. Who was Jesus? And who do we say he is? Well, during Jesus' earthly ministry, there was a constant debate about this question. People were always wrestling with his identity. Was he a teacher? Was he a rabbi? Was he a prophet? Was he actually divine or simply endued with divine power? He had authority over nature. He calmed storms. He walked on water. But where did this authority come from? Well, there was a religious leader like Nicodemus or a Samaritan woman at the well. The question was always the same after people walked away from Jesus. Who is this guy? And why won't he come right out and tell us? Well, one day, right smack in the middle of the Gospels, Jesus decides to deal with this issue directly. And Matthew, who writes one of the accounts of Jesus' life, who was a tax collector, who spent years traveling around with Jesus, Matthew gives us this story as a firsthand eyewitness. It's found in the 16th chapter of his biography of Jesus in our Bible. Let me read it to you. Beginning in verse 13, Matthew tells us this: when Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked the disciples, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" They replied, "Some, well, they say it's John, you're John the Baptist. Others say Elijah. Still others, Jeremiah or one of the prophets." "But what about you?" Jesus asked. "Who do you say I am?" Simon Peter answered, You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." And Jesus replied, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. I will give you the keys to the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." Then he ordered his disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah. Go figure. What are you doing, Jesus? Is this a puzzling story to you? See, the Bible doesn't tell us, but I think Jesus has been waiting for this moment for a long time. The disciples have been through quite a bit with him. They've been journeying around somewhere between 18 months and 2 years with Jesus. They've been through a lot together. And they've gotten to see Jesus up close. They've gotten to know him in a way that others did not get to know him, up close and personal. They watched him teach in the temple and wow the crowds. They'd seen him miraculously feed thousands with 2 sardines and 5 Bojangles biscuits. They listened in fear as he challenged the religious leaders. And they stood in silence as he healed blind people. Who was this Jesus? Who was this Jesus really? That's the question that's kind of living in the disciples' hearts. But maybe they were a little too afraid to come right out and ask it. Well, Jesus being Jesus, and this the Bible doesn't tell us, but I imagine Jesus is walking around, and Jesus decides it's time for the DTR. Do y'all know what the DTR is? If you are still dating, you know what a DTR is, right? It's the define the relationship moment. Are we boyfriend, girlfriend? Are we friends? Are we like, do we like each other? Or do we like each other? Like, what's the relationship, right? So Jesus is going to have a DTR. So he takes his disciples, Matthew tells us, up to Caesarea Philippi. Nothing significant for our story about that, except that that's kind of up in the mountains, up to the north. It's kind of like Jesus has taken his disciples away on a retreat to get a little bit of small group time. And along the way, on the road, Jesus asks them this puzzling question. He says, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" Who do people say the Son of Man is? Now, don't get hung up on that phrase, Son of Man. That's just the title that Jesus used to refer to himself. So basically, he's saying, "Hey guys, listen, what's the word on the street? What are people saying about me? What are the rumors you're hearing?" Now, Jesus isn't asking this question because he doesn't know what people are saying, right? I mean, Jesus has heard all the same comments. Nor is he asking this because he's insecure and somehow wants to know from his buddies how many Twitter followers he has. No, Jesus is asking because he wants the disciples to reflect on what others are saying. He wants the disciples to consider what are the options when it comes to who Jesus is. And the disciples reply, look at this verse with me. They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." It's funny, the Bible tells us that when Jesus asked this question, they reply, they all reply, and I kind of imagine them kind of just talking over each other. "Well, I heard he was Elijah." "No, no, no, somebody else said he's Jeremiah." "No, no, no, John the Baptist." And to our ears, these comparisons can sound kind of funny, especially if we aren't familiar with these characters. But you see, they had never encountered someone like Jesus. Some believe that Jesus was John the Baptizer. John had been killed by a local governor. He'd been beheaded. And there was this lore around the Jewish culture that maybe John was coming back from the dead to seek revenge. So some people thought maybe that's Jesus. Only problem is Jesus and John the Baptist were cousins and lived at the same time. So how could that be? Others thought that maybe he was Elijah. Elijah is a prophet in the Old Testament who had done some crazy miracles. He had healed people. He had done stuff where he called fire out of heaven. But Jesus had done miracles that made Elijah look like a puppet. Jesus had done things that Elijah never even dreamed possible. And still others thought, well, maybe he's just a prophet like Jeremiah. I mean, he cares so much about the poor and the hurting and the lonely and the sick. That's what Jeremiah always seemed to be talking about. Maybe he's Jeremiah. See, the problem is people didn't really know what to do with Jesus. They had never encountered anybody like him ever. And so they try to squeeze him into one of their familiar boxes. Well, let's cram him into the Jeremiah box. Then at least we have him contained. At least we have him labeled. He's predictable. He's safe. Well, you see, they tried to squeeze him in, but either Jesus was a moral and spiritual teacher like John the Baptizer, or he was like Elijah or Jeremiah, one of the prophets. But as they tried to cram him into the box, Jesus had the same habit he always did of breaking out of boxes and tombs when we try to lock him in. So after the disciples had finished telling Jesus all the possibilities, then Jesus takes this question and he does the Jesus jiu-jitsu moment. You know what jiu-jitsu is? He takes it and he turns it on him. And all of a sudden the question is directed to the disciples. Okay, I hear what everybody else is saying, but what about you? Who do you say I am? And Peter, oh, bless his heart. Peter, always willing to bat first, steps up and speaks out loud. And he says what all of the other disciples are thinking but are too scared to say out loud. And almost in a whisper, I imagine, Jesus, you're the Messiah. You're the Son of the living God. Now, for us in today's world, to hear that phrase, it loses a little bit of the power that it would have had for Jesus' audience. You see, we have to understand that Peter is saying something remarkable here. He's not just saying, hey, Jesus, we think you're great. Or hey, Jesus, you're really neat. No, he says, Jesus, I think you're the Messiah. The what? The Messiah. And that word, Messiah, was a powerful word in the Jewish culture. It literally means anointed one, but it was used to refer to the king, God's king, the one that God had chosen to rule and govern his people. And it's interesting because the Greek word that Matthew uses is actually the translation of the Jewish word Messiah. The Greek word is the word Christos, where we get Christian from. Literally, to be a Christian is to be someone who recognizes Jesus as the anointed one, as the Messiah. Do you see that? So what Peter is really saying here is incredible. He's saying, Jesus, you're the one we've been waiting for. You're the one we've been hoping for all these centuries. You're the deliverer. You're the rescuer. You're the king that God has chosen to send to free us, to liberate us, to redeem us and rescue us. You're the one who's going to save us, Jesus. But notice something else. Peter takes it a step further because you catch the very next words he uses? He says, Jesus, you're the Messiah, but you're also the Son of the living God. Peter's like, look, Jesus, I remember I was there when you healed my mother-in-law. She was sick and dying and you touched her and she got up and started serving us. I was there when you stepped out and you walked on water. Remember, I was sinking and you were on it. And I don't even know how that happened. Jesus, I was there when you walked and there was that paralyzed man that hadn't walked in 38 years and you spoke to him and suddenly he stood up and Jesus, I was there when we were in the boat and we all thought we were going to die and just with a snap of your fingers, you stopped the wind and the waves and the whole storm ceased. And Jesus, I've come to this one conclusion. There's only one answer for this, Jesus. You must be the Son of God. And I just love Jesus' response here. Do you catch this? No, Peter, I'm just a great teacher. I'm just a good moral example. No, that's not what Jesus says. Look at what he does. He's like, ding, 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 winner, winner, chicken dinner. Look at what he says. Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven. In other words, yes, Peter, you finally get it. It's been 2 years. I've been waiting for this moment, and you finally see who I really am. Bingo. You're right on target. Now, I want to pause here for just a moment before moving on. I want to pause, and I want to ask you for a second. Imagine yourself with those disciples. If Jesus were to look you in the eyes and say, who do you say I am? What would your response be today? How would you answer that question? I was recently reading an interview with Bono. Yes, Bono of the band U2. I will not do my Bono impersonation right now, but I do a very fine Bono impersonation. You might not know this about Bono. Maybe you do. Bono is a Christian. He's a follower of Jesus. And in this interview, the interviewer is pressing him on this very question. Who does Bono say Jesus is? And I want to just read a little excerpt from this interview to you. The interviewer asked Bono this. He says, Jesus Christ has ranked among the world's great thinkers, but Son of God isn't that far-fetched. And I love Bono's reply. He says, no, it's not far-fetched to me. Look, the secular response to the Christ story always goes like this. He was a great prophet, obviously a very interesting guy, had a lot to say along the lines of other great prophets, be they Elijah, Muhammad, Buddha, or Confucius. But actually, Christ doesn't allow you that. He doesn't let you off the hook. Christ says, no. I'm not saying I'm a teacher. Don't call me a teacher. I'm not saying I'm a prophet. I'm saying I'm the Messiah. I'm saying I am God incarnate. And people say, no, no, please, just be a prophet. A prophet we can take. A prophet we can handle. You're a bit eccentric. We've had John the Baptist eating locusts and wild honey. We can handle that. But don't mention the M word, Jesus, because you know we're going to have to crucify you. And Bono goes on, no, no, I know that you're expecting me to come back with an army and set you free from these creeps, but actually I am the Messiah. And at this point, Bono imagines Jesus. At this point, Bono imagines everybody starts staring at their shoes and saying, oh my God, he's going to keep saying this. So what we're left with is either Christ, who was who he said he was, the Messiah, or he's a complete nutcase. Bono is picking up on a line of thinking that was first developed by the author C.S. Lewis, a great Christian thinker. I've quoted him a couple times in this series. He's the guy who wrote the Chronicles of Narnia, if you're familiar with that story. And C.S. Lewis lays it out this way. He says, when you go to the answer to the question, who is Jesus? If the Gospels, the eyewitness accounts of Jesus' life, if the Gospels are accurate in reflecting his teaching, then we basically have three options, three ways you can answer the question. Maybe you've heard this before. The first way is that Jesus was a liar. He was just making this stuff up. That's one possibility. You may say, you know what? I believe that the Gospels say what they do. I believe Jesus taught them, but I think he was a total fraud. The second is that we have to conclude he was delusional, or in Bono's words, I can't say it like Bono, he says, a nutcase. Or there's a third option. And C.S. Lewis says, what if the third option is true? What if his claims to be the Messiah and the Son of God are actually true? Lewis goes on, he says, in other words, from a purely logical stance, Jesus was either a liar, a lunatic, or he really was the Lord. Now, it's an interesting line of philosophical argument. And I think it builds a really strong intellectual case. And oftentimes, we need philosophical arguments to remove intellectual hurdles that stand between us and following Jesus. But I don't actually think that's what this story is about. I actually think Jesus is pressing one layer deeper. And so I want to come back to the story. Because you see, I don't actually think that our biggest struggle in answering this question is philosophical or theological. I actually think that the struggle is found in our hearts. The story continues in the next couple verses of Matthew. Let me read this to you and see if I can unpack this. From that time on, so right after Peter gives Jesus the answer, and Jesus responds, winner, winner, chicken dinner, Matthew goes on telling us this. From that time on, Jesus began to explain to the disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed on the third day and be raised to life. Peter, he's just confessed, you're the Messiah, you're the Son of God. Peter took Jesus aside and began to rebuke him. Just pause there for a minute, right? Hey, yeah, you're going to rebuke Jesus? I love this Peter guy. Takes him aside and he rebukes him. Never, Lord. This shall never happen to you. Jesus turns and says to Peter, one of the most famous lines in all the Bible, get behind me, Satan. You're a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. Then Jesus said to his disciples, whoever wants to be my disciple, get this, must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it. You see, right after Peter answers the question, right after Peter hits Jesus' identity right on target, Jesus begins to talk about the cross, and Peter doesn't want anything to do with it. You see, Peter was all fine with Messiah. He was all fine with Lord when it meant king, when it meant victory, when it meant freedom. But when that king had to go to a cross, Peter said, I don't want anything to do with that. He was all fine with Messiah, but he didn't want any of the mess. He was fine with salvation, but he didn't want the death. In a way, Peter wanted two things that Jesus held together, like a Krispy Kreme and sugar. Like Stephen Curry and an NBA title. Oh, sorry, was that too soon? Might be a little too soon. See, Peter wanted a king, but no cross. And Jesus is like, it doesn't work like that. It goes together. And I think this is what troubles us about this question. Because the cross is actually the thing that offends our culture. The cross is actually the stumbling block. We don't mind Jesus the king, Jesus the good moral dude, Jesus the teacher, Jesus the nice guy to everybody. We like that Jesus. But when we're confronted with the cross, it confronts us with a deeper problem. Because the cross is the reminder that God's Son didn't just come to earth to teach us or to show us how to be better people. God's Son came to earth to give his life as a sacrifice for us. So that the wrongs we've done, the brokenness that is in me and in you, could be forgiven and restored, and that we might experience life. That's what he means when he says, if you want to save your life, you'll lose it for me. You've got to pick up your cross and follow me. There is no way to life and forgiveness and redemption and freedom apart from the cross. But this confronts me with another problem. Because Jesus' question, who do you say that I am, now becomes an opportunity to confess the truth, to tell the truth. Not just the truth about who Jesus is, but the truth about who I am. The truth about the glory and beauty and grace and redemption of Jesus, and the truth about the brokenness and desperation and ache and longing that is in me. That's why he says, who do you say I am? It's an invitation to confess. You see, at the end of the day, friends, and please, please hear me on this. At the end of the day, Christianity is not a list of rules that we follow to get into heaven. It's not some practical wisdom to help me live a better moral life. It's not even the thing that makes me feel good and bandages up all my wounds. Christianity at the core is the cross. It's the death and resurrection of Jesus. And the life that we have when we choose to follow him to the cross, that is Christianity at its most basic. I want to end with just a story of a friend that I've met recently who has walked this same journey that the disciples walk in this story. I first met her, we'll call her Rachel, not her real name, but I first met Rachel at our Huntersville campus about 2 months ago. Rachel's recently graduated from college, and she never grew up in church. No one in her family is a Christian, but she had a Christian roommate in college, and you know how obnoxious Christian college roommates can be. So she graduated from college, and she decided, you know what? I need to figure this Jesus thing out. I don't know what I think about Jesus. And if these things that my roommate are telling me are true, well, then that might change the direction of the life that I'm getting ready to live after college. And so she did what any person living in Huntersville who's trying to figure out who Jesus is does. She went to Lake Forest because we're a church of skeptics and spiritual explorers and people just trying to figure this Jesus thing out. And so she fit right in. And so she came, and it happened to be the weekend that the crazy guy from Westlake was preaching over in Huntersville. And I was actually preaching on the Apostles' Creed, which we sang in that song just a little bit earlier. I believe in God the Father. I believe in Christ the Son. And I was preaching on the point in the Apostles' Creed where it says that Jesus died. He went to hell. Remember we sang Highway to Hell in church? You didn't know you could sing AC/DC at church, but you can. We sang Highway to Hell. And then Jesus came back to life. He was resurrected. And so she pulled me aside after the service and said, Aaron, can I talk to you? I've got some questions about that. And so we sat and we talked, and she asked really honest questions. And I gave the best answers I could. I connected her with some other resources. And I gave her an invitation. I said, you know what, Rachel, today if you would like, you can make a decision to put your trust in Jesus today and begin a relationship with him. And she said, Aaron, thanks for the invitation. I'm not ready today. And I said, okay, that's cool. So we exchanged emails, and I gave her a book that she could read to wrestle with some of this stuff. And I didn't hear from her again for about 2 months until just 2 weeks ago when I was preaching at Huntersville and Rachel happened to be there, and she came up to me after the service ecstatic. She was just coming unglued. She said, Aaron, I've decided I think the resurrection really happened. I think Jesus is who he says he is. I'm pretty convinced of that. I said, awesome. Are you ready to become a Christian today? She said, no. I said, why not? And she said, I'm scared. You see, it was an issue of the heart. She said, I'm not sure I'm ready. I know what I believe. I know what I think about Jesus. But I know that to become a Christian, I have to entrust my whole self, my heart, to God. And I'm not sure I'm ready to make that step. So I said, well, I'll pray this week that God will give you the courage, that he'll initiate with you. You'll feel his invitation. And just this last Tuesday, I got a card in my office folder at Huntersville from Rachel. Said, Aaron, I just want you to know I decided this weekend to follow Jesus. Isn't that incredible? Do you see the journey that she went on? And I think that's the journey that Jesus is inviting every last one of us. Maybe you've got questions like Rachel. Maybe you're like one of the people that the disciples talk about. You know, I don't know what I think about Jesus. Maybe he was just a crazy nutcase like Bono is saying. I don't know. Maybe he's kind of a crazy teacher. So I don't know what I think. That's okay. God says, come and see. Come, taste and see. Discover who I really am. And we want to be a part of that journey with you. I hope you'll take us up on that. In fact, that Welcome 101 class that I mentioned, that's a great next step. If you don't know what you think about Jesus, that's all we talk about in that class. And it's a safe environment for you to ask those questions. But maybe you're more like Peter. You know the right answer. You know that Jesus is Lord. You know he's the Messiah. But there's something holding you back. You're not sure you're ready to take that step of faith and trust. I'm going to pray that just like God gave Rachel courage, he might give you the courage this week to take that step, to begin that journey, to begin that relationship. Or maybe you're one of the many in this room who made that decision a long time ago. But even today, as we've been talking, it's an opportunity to say, God, I want to affirm this again. I want to acknowledge you again. I want you to be the Lord of my life. Would you come and take that seat, take that throne in my heart and in my soul? Can we pray together? Father, as I just begin this prayer time, I think about those words that Matthew relays to us that you say to Peter, that it's not human teaching that revealed this to him, but it was you, God. You were the one revealing yourself in Jesus. And Lord, I thank you for those that you are revealing yourself to even today. A sense of you with us, a sense of you stirring our hearts, an ache or a longing for you that nothing else satisfies. God, would you not quit? Would you persist? Would you continue to pursue us? And Lord, I pray for my friends who are on the fence. They're not sure what they think about you. They've got questions. They've got concerns. God, would you help them? Would you walk with them? Would you give them the answers they need? And would they sense your invitation to draw near to you and to pursue you? God, for those of us who've been trying to follow you and the cross just feels like a big ask, a big hurdle, God, I pray that you'd give us the courage to continue affirming your lordship in our lives. Jesus, everything we do is about you here. We want you to be the center of this community. We want you to be at the center of our lives. Lord, we want to confess together that it's you that we need and you alone. You are the Messiah. You are the Son of God. You are our only hope. Jesus, come and take your place in our lives, we pray. In Jesus' name.